All right, I would like to call to order the Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water. It is May 23rd at 3 o'clock. We just had the ribbon cutting for the new administrative building and shop complex, which is great. And are we doing public inputs or do we not have any?
No and no, there's nobody in.
Okay. Okay, then we will go right to Dana and the 2023 audit presentation.
Dana, do you want to share your screen or I have it up on 1 hour?
Yeah, let's just look at your screen. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep, great.
Okay, that's great. I pushed for video to go, but maybe it's just that I'm having a bad hair day. It doesn't want to like cooperate. So I don't know if you can see me or if it matters.
Oh, we can
See you. Yep.
Yeah, we can see you.
Oh, well, then that's scary because I have no idea what I look like. So anyway, I'm really, really, first of all, I'm just so sorry that I had a total spaz out. I was totally planning on being there in person. And then just it's a long story of series of crazy events, but I appreciate you letting me zoom in. I see. So you've got the financial statements up. I was going to basically direct you to page 12 of the PDF, where it is our report on the financial statements. The initial information is the letter of transmittal, some background information about the district, et cetera, et cetera. But on page 12 is our report. I'll wait till you get there.
That'll be page one in the paper.
Got it.
Now, Chris, I think we're...
Oh, okay.
Which page 12?
Yeah, and it's page one. It's after the Roman numerals on the written report, so... Is that, I think we've passed it. Right. That's the ending it. Yeah, go back. There you go. That's the first couple pages. Okay, so this is just our report. It goes on along... like three pages now. Anyway, and really all I wanted to point out is that we have a clean opinion. There's nothing to point out. We're saying everything, the financial statements were presented in conformity with generally accepted accounting principles, and we had nothing unusual to point out. And so that's all good. You know, there's nothing unusual in it. So it's not really a lot to tell you. I just wanted to make sure you knew where that was in this document. We could skip ahead like two or three pages to page, write this one down. Oh, I did. Page 15 of the PDF and page 4 of the actual written report. This is just the first page of the management's discussion and analysis. And the next several pages have summarized financial data from the financial statements. But I just thought I'd mention these financial highlights that you can kind of see. We didn't mention in here the biggest kind of, I don't know, unusual item was the issuance of the bonds for the facility that you just went and had. So you had a ribbon cutting ceremony. That's kind of cool. So, anyway, that's just a place to kind of point out this is the start of the management's narrative about the financials, and summarized financial information is in there. But then I was going to have us go to page 29 of the PDF, and then it's page 18 and 19 of the actual document to just look at the balance sheet and kind of point out a couple of little things on that, mostly related to the bonds for the new facility. So you can see on kind of midway in the page, we're under non-current assets on the left. We have restricted cash and cash equivalents. And this year they're almost 22 million. Well, 2023, they're almost 22 million. And in 2022, it was 5.6 million. So the biggest increase is related to the bond issue. It was $18 million bond issue, and most of that is not yet spent. And it's in a construction account with the bank and is therefore needed to be classified as restricted. So that's why that's up a lot. The line below it, I was just going to mention the net pension asset. We love the pension accounting that Gadsby's got us doing so much. So last year, because the market, well, in 2022, because the market had been so strong right at the end of the year and the measurement period that they use for calculating the pension activity, it swung such that you had a net pension asset at the end of 2022. at the end of 2023, it swung back the other way. And you can see on the right, almost directly across the page, we have a net pension liability now. It's not huge, but I did just want to point out that swing. And so this accounting for the pensions is kind of odd. It swings with kind of the markets and the different factors in the actuarial valuation. But regardless, I still want to point out that Utah is in really good shape. Our pension is well funded. And so this doesn't necessarily impact your cash flows as far as the pension and your budgeting as far as the pension and such. So it's kind of a odd accounting situation, but it doesn't affect your day to day. Another thing I wanted to point out on the right hand side under the long term obligations is the large increase in the notes and bonds payable. It went from the long term portion went from 32 million to 47 million. And that again is just the bonds for the new facility. So other than that, most things are pretty consistent year over year. Unless I can pause if there are any questions or if Steve or Andy want to point out anything.
No, not. And the reason the long term or the notes and bonds payable didn't go up with a full 18 million is because we're still paying off others. So every year we pay off about $2 or $3 million in debt. So that's why it's not up by 18 million. It's up by about 15 because we did pay some debt off during the year.
Yeah.
But we incurred new debt.
That's a great point. Thanks for mentioning that, because it doesn't just, it's not static for sure. The next page, it's page 20 of the written report, and page 30, I believe. Yeah, the P&L. So this is the income statement, essentially. And again, there wasn't a lot that was really varied this year. There was a rate increase implemented, which I know you all know, but it was also offset with incentives or efforts to, minimize use or be conservative. So even though there was a rate increase, it wasn't just huge what it did to the revenues. Certainly, obviously helped. The other thing I was going to mention is interest income was, $800,000 higher than the prior year. And obviously that's just related to market conditions right now. The PTIF is offering higher rates just along with everything. Again, I guess I would just pause here if there are any questions or if Steve, you wanted to mention anything else.
Well, looking at the impact fees and the interest income, we kind of talked about that during the year. When interest is high, people weren't building as much. So we only had $800,000 worth of impact fees, but we made interest income. The previous year, income, but we got more impact fees. So fortunately, they kind of work inversely. Like if one's up, the other one's usually down. So they kind of hedge each other. They kind of protect our overall revenue picture. So
Dina,
question
on the last set of pages on the net pension asset thing. Is there anything we could do differently there, or that's, we're just at the, like whatever the state's doing with those.
We have to rely on the state for that, because the calculations for all this are extremely complicated. It would involve, hiring your own actuary, et cetera, et cetera. And since you're part of a combined plan, the state just does it as a total plan, and then they do allocations to all the participants. So every entity that participates in across the whole state gets their report of their share of the total of these things. And so really there's nothing you could do. And I'm personally grateful that the state just takes care of it all, because it really is very complex. And so really we're just kind of subject to their measurements and such. Maybe one thing I would kind of elaborate on there, we obtain from the URS, the Utah Retirement Systems, we obtain from them their audited financial statement and also what is called a SOC 1 Type 2 report, meaning it's an audit of their controls. It's a service organization audit. And so we get a copy of that to look at it and make sure there are no exceptions in it. We look at the opinion on that, and that's all part of what we do as part of the audit. So I wouldn't say we're relying on the URS without good reason to. We're basically saying it is justifiable that we're relying on their approach and their systems.
That's really insightful. Thank you.
Okay. The next place I was just thinking to go to, let's see, I have all these marked. would be, it's page 43 of the PDF file and page 33 of the paper document. And that, this is a footnote that just delineates the restricted asset or the restricted cash and cash equivalents. And again, I know we're kind of beating a dead horse here, but you can see kind of midway on the upper part of the chart, there's the construction account for the new bonds is 17.9 million. And I can't remember if some of the, you know, it's 15 million off. Maybe some of that was the bond issue costs came out of that account. I can't remember now exactly why it's not precisely 18 million or more with interest.
Yeah, it was.
But that's basically the. Yeah, go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, there was $90,000 in fees and costs we had to pay. And then we had basically about a month and a half to earn back interest. So that,
okay. That's right.
It's where it is.
Okay. That's, I kind of figured that was it. I should have looked at it more closely before I start babbling about it. But so I, the main reason I wanted to point out the, this footnote is to just be clear. So you know what the restricted cash is for. And I know you guys are all really experienced at this, just the fact that the, even though you have all this cash sitting on hand, so much of it is set aside for legally restricted uses. So we can't just say, well, we'll go do whatever with it. So I think this is just a good footnote to be aware of so you understand what it's used for. The other, another note I wanted to kind of point out is page 47 in the PDF. And 37 on the paper document. Oh, I think it went. Yeah, there we go. There we go. Is that it? I can't tell. Yeah, that's it. So on the upper chart, you can see where the $18 million was added to the bonds payable. Not just shows the activity for this year, but then like what Steve was mentioning earlier is the next column over shows all the debt service payment for all the reductions that took place during the year. And so I just thought I'd point out that's a good place to kind of see a summary of the notes and bonds that you have outstanding. And then the next several pages give a lot more information as far as we don't need to go through them in major detail, but just maturities, the amortization schedule of the various bonds. So, and all that's kind of a little bit new as far as what's required for financial statement reporting. And then on page, I think it would be 58 of the PDF and page 40, the written document, it's note 8, and that's called pledged revenues. And basically it's just explaining that while you have all these revenue bonds out there, revenues that are coming in are basically securing those loans, those, the bonds. So it, the revenues are, you know, kind of first priority, first position to pay those off. So that was really, that's all I really had that I was going to specifically call out on the financials. We've talked about, you know, the footnote related to pensions and stuff goes on for an eternity. But I think we've talked about that in general. I probably wouldn't worry too much about it. It's note 11 if you wanted to look at it a little bit more, but I feel like we've covered it. Unless there are any other questions, or Steve, do you want me to point out anything else?
No.
We good? Should we go on?
You've hit the high points of what I think we needed to cover.
And okay. Okay.
This is Joel. I have a question. Is there anything, and this is not directed to you, would you, but is there anything that you're concerned about or worried about from a cash flow standpoint or anything in general?
Really not. You know, as far as I know, you guys are monitoring it all really well. And I think we've talked about just the, I appreciated discussions we had as far as the process of doing these rate studies to make sure you're charging rates sufficient to cover your costs. And I know it's a big project to manage all this. And I also know you're dealing with, you're also managing the citizenry and understanding that they don't, you've got to deal with their expectations and stuff. So I feel like it's being done really well. And I would just continue with that same level of oversight in terms of the cash flows and such. Other things, we talk about internal controls. And I don't know, maybe now is a good time. We could switch over to the other reports that we have. The one One is called the Report on Internal Control over Financial Reporting and Compliance and Other Matters. But I can kind of summarize that. These reports, if we had found issues that we were concerned about as far as internal controls or anything, we would have explained those here. So this first report is the one that's required for audits under government auditing standards. And we consider the district's, that's the verbiage in here, is we consider the district's internal control over financial reporting. We don't audit the internal control. We don't form an opinion on it. But in our process to just properly plan the audit and plan the audit procedures we want to do, we do gain an understanding of it. And we do walkthroughs of several transactions to just make sure we understand how they're working and that the internal controls that are, that management has described to us are in place are actually there and that we've seen them and such. And in all of that, and also, anyway, in that part of this, the report, we didn't find anything to report. We found, we didn't even have management comments for suggestions because everything is going so well. And we also, we certainly didn't find anything that would be required to be reported as like a material weakness or anything. We just found nothing like that. And similarly, in this audit, this report, we also, we review compliance requirements in various aspects. Like we go through the state compliance, which we'll address in just a minute. We also look at things like our payroll tax deposits being made timely, you know, other just more general compliance with laws and requirements. And we found nothing that we would need to report on. Everything's going smoothly. And so then this page that you're on right now is our report to the state auditor's office. And every third year we have to do, they give us specific requirements we need to test for compliance. And every third year we have to do quite a few more. Like I think last year there were maybe three of these. And then this year we have the expanded list of the topics that we test. And that's just a state auditor thing. They require these every third year. And again, in all these requirements, we have an audit guide from the state auditor's office that has us check various requirements. Check this, check that. Make sure this is happening. Make sure that is happening. And everything was fine and perfect. We didn't find any issues that we would need to report. Otherwise, they would be in this report as a management comment. So from that standpoint, everything looks really great as far as internal controls and compliance. That's not a guarantee. We can't test everything. Like I say, we're not forming an opinion on any of these things. We are just doing kind of the background basically to, as part of a normal audit. But things do look good. Do you want to pull up that last report? It's just a letter to the board. Yeah. So this is just a letter that is required under audit standards that we communicate certain things with the board at the end of the audit. And for the most part, this is a lot of boilerplate language, but there's nothing unique that we needed to call out. So it discusses, accounting practices. There is a note in here that there was a new GASB statement for GAAP requiring a different treatment for subscription-based, technology, computer, software subscriptions. And we reviewed everything for that and the district didn't have anything that was required to be treated differently based on this audit standard or this accounting standard. So we just indicated it was adopted, but there was no change to the district's financial statements as a result of it. The next couple paragraphs talk about certain estimates we use estimates in preparing the financial statements. One is the pension liability and we get that from the Utah Retirement Systems. And another one has to do with depreciation. We talked about the next little paragraph or page says certain financial statement disclosures are sensitive or important. And we talked about these, as far as note 4 is the restricted assets that we talked about and also note 7 and 8 regarding the loans and the pledged revenues. The rest of this is all pretty, just like I say, it's just so boilerplate. One says difficulties encountered in performing in the audit. And this is a good opportunity for me to say we had no difficulties encountered during the audit, and quite the opposite. We get treated very well. And I have, Steve and Sharon and Lisa, everybody just gives us such cooperation. The audit goes extremely smoothly. So I'm really grateful for that. Just kudos, because seriously, it's just a pleasure. The next one talks about corrected and uncorrected misstatements. We didn't have any. We made a few little adjustments of things that just kind of came up. Some stuff Steve knew we needed to adjust before we started the audit, but none of it was major or enough that would require us to call out anything. And really, other than that, I mean, most of this is just pretty dull and boring, and there's just nothing to point out. So unless there are other questions on this letter, or on anything else.
Can I ask what RSI stands for at the bottom of
the page? Yes. Yes. It's a quiz. It's required supplementary information, and that under GASB several years ago, it's probably been a lot longer than I would want to even think, but they adopted GASB 34, and then it was amended by GASB 37, and that's when they started requiring certain required supplementary information. The management's discussion and analysis is one of those items, and then the pension information is the other item. Other governments, like a general fund, not, you guys are an enterprise fund, but like a general fund would also have to present their budget as part of that, whereas yours is supplemental information but not required.
I have a couple, one other question, and maybe I'll ask it a different way. Is there anything that we should be doing that we're not doing?
Well, let's put it this way. I can't think of anything. You know, in discussions with Steve and Andy and Lisa, everything that I'm aware of that you should be doing is being done. Every kind of internal control thing that I've seen over, you know, my many years of doing this kind of thing is being addressed. The state compliance requirements are being addressed well and timely. So I can't, like I say, I can't guarantee that every single solitary thing is being done exactly right, because there may be some things out there that I just haven't hit upon or become aware of. But for the things I do know and I look for specifically in an audit and that I'm required to, and just also general background that I know to look for and focus on, I don't see any suggestions. Otherwise, we would have written up a letter suggesting them.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have.
Yeah. Dana, it has been a pleasure to work with you on the audit over this past 4 years. And, you know, really, it's great that you have a high opinion of our team, and it's great that that you enjoy doing what you do for us, but we really appreciate this. There's a lot of work that goes into this, and I know it's a little dry, but I am sad that we will not have you doing our audit next year.
Just a little clarification. She can bid again.
Oh, she can. Okay. She I didn't know that. I thought
so. The board would have to approve.
The board has to approve.
Yeah.
Through the RFP, but she's not eliminated. We just have to go out to RFP again.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So, well, good. Then we look forward to your RFP next
week. Well, I've joked with her that if she doesn't, then I'll feel really bad, because obviously she's just been blowing smoke that I'm good to work with. But right, Dana? But yes, so I mean, we don't necessarily.
Yeah.
Yep, she dropped out.
Okay, great. Well, then we are on to executive session if we need to. Do we have anything for executive session?
No.
Okay, great. Okay, let's move on to the consent agenda. We've got the April 18th meeting minutes. Did anyone have any changes to those? And then we've got the April check registers, although I noticed we did not have the credit card report.
Yeah.
I just typed that this week too.
It's actually available if we want to pull it up. Sorry, I apparently missed that before I went out of town, of the credit card charges. It's in the G Drive, Chris.
Or can you just send both of them next month?
Yeah, I can send the one for this month and next month.
Okay. Did anyone have any questions on the check register?
I had a couple.
The Nickerson seal repair, which pump was that on?
Those are on two, we have two problems about Lost Canyon, but Lost Canyon pumps.
Oh, they're Lost Canyon. Okay. Cool. And then just one side comment. I thought it was funny that there was a free chlorine sensor that cost money.
I called that in our meeting this morning. I said, I really hope somebody will ask about
that. I almost wondered if you labeled it that way just for the sheer, like, yeah, so well done.
Good catch. Yeah, Steve had to Google it.
I did. I Googled a lot of that. What is it? What's free chlorine? So I had to educate myself a little bit too.
I knew what it was, but I was funny that you put it in that way. Sorry, yeah. We'll just say
residual.
Yeah. This is a small one, but is it simple file? The lean release. What were those?
Simple file is the company that allows us to record things electronically to the camera.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't an actual lean. It's just they help us with that service.
Yeah. To either release leans, put leans on, record easements. There we go. Like the
okay.
Per charge, per filing charge.
Okay. And then Smith Harvickson, there was a legal charge on water rights. What was that on?
So Jeff Gittens has been helping us clean up our water rights, and he's also helping us on the state engineer's website, mm-hmm. where an actual point of diversion is and where a water right is. He's actually cleaning all that up so they're as close that we can get them.
Nice. Okay, so it's just ongoing.
Yeah.
Got it. And then I saw that there was a drug screening. Did that come out positive or without further issue?
Correct.
Okay, sweet. That's all I wanted to know.
You mean negative, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, positive for us, yeah.
Right. Cool. I was wondering if we did some kind of audit on deposits. It seemed like there were a lot of deposit releases and almost all of them were missing a half or a full lid.
So we collect a security deposit, the $1,500. Right. They don't get it back until it can pass a final inspection. A lot of them could not because poly lids were not available. So we actually purchased a lot ourselves and then basically passed them to the customers at cost so that then they could pass their final inspection and get their deposit back. They're not all the same because if it's a dual meter pit, then the deposits got split. So they only had to pay half and half, and some of them paid the whole poly lid themselves. So they all start at 1500, but just to try to clean it up, we're like, let's buy a bunch, get them out to people. And Kimberly on Anna's staff has been doing a great job of going through and just clearing off a lot. Because if you notice in our financials, we have about $1 million worth of those deposits before this. Now we're down into that 800,000s. And so that's better. So there was a lot of cleanup work, and a lot of it was that we just took the initiative to get the poly lids and help get this ball rolling, let's say.
Yeah, because, I mean, some of the releases were, I mean, I bet their houses have been done for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, that's great. That's nice to kind of get that cleaned up a little bit. So did I have any questions? Now everything else Ian got. Did anyone else have any questions on the check register? Okay. What about the Carollo Engineers purchase list?
So we scoped out our work for this year with the code that's resulting from that competitive SOQ that we put out for treatment-related engineering services. Got some good input and involvement from a large group, including Ian, who usually support making some time for it. We're able to incorporate that and put this scope order together. So through the SOQ process, that procurement effort, we've got a master services agreement, and if approved, this purchase order will go into the first task order under that greater engineering services agreement. For hopefully many years of successful work with the Carollo folks.
Who else bid for this?
So from the SOQ part of it?
Yeah.
So we have two responding firms, Jacobs and the Carollo team. And we were happy to get those two in the Intermountain region. They're probably two of the, if not the strongest firms with a local presence where it kind of comes to like surface water treatment. Yeah, true experts at it. So I think we had a good group. It was extremely competitive. And the Corolla folks won out, and then Legion Croft is scoping it.
Great. Yeah. Do we need to make a motion to, okay, so can we make a motion to approve the whole consent agenda? Or do we need to approve the purchase order separately?
Lisa?
You can do the whole consent agenda.
I think it's okay. Part of the consent agenda.
Would anyone like to make a motion?
Just real quick.
Oh.
In like 30 seconds or less, maybe. Can you explain the bench testing in the process? Because that's like a huge portion of that purchase order that I was not expecting.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Corolla folks kind of, they have some ideas that are creative and may end up result in some serious cost savings for the district and project we do up in City Mile. And in order to see if those are feasible or if they're even the right ones to pursue, we got to prove those out on the bench. And so there's a significant bench testing effort, gathering the data, proving process that we can build on the bench before we move forward with a conceptual design and present the appropriate or recommend the route we want to go for a conceptual design. So I think it'll be a good effort. And really tick all the boxes for us before we go any further. So things like direct filtration we talked about, which would be a big shift in the concept of the plant. We want to see really good data on that through bench testing, and we can even do some actual full-scale testing with the plant as it is before we decide if that's a feasible option worth pursuing, for example.
And what's the name of the meter we're going to buy?
Another really attractive piece of this is we're going to have a Zeta meter, it's called. Zeta potential is kind of a way to quantify how the coagulation process is working. It actually quantifies how colloidal particles are attracted to each other or repelled. And long term, it can help us make treatment process decisions on the fly. So we can back into some sort of model or tool where we can actually just plot the single Zeta instrument read and then decide how much coagulant to use as the part of the process.
So instead of guessing.
So instead of, in addition to this piloting and everything we're doing on the front end, it can be a long-term tool that will help our folks run the plan. You know, going off something besides just, sheer experience and that sort of thing that the operations folks learn. So I'm excited about the Zeta work. I think it'll be good. Yeah, it should be a good tool for the treatment operations folks.
But it wasn't free, right?
No, it ain't free.
Is it part of Corolla's?
The procurement of the Zeta meter is in their scope of work and their contract.
But we keep it.
Correct. It's ours.
It's good pick up.
Move to approve the consent agenda?
Yes. Are no other questions, if somebody would like to make a motion. Okay. Corey would like to make a motion. Ian can second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. Okay, Steve, would you like to tell us about our April results?
Yes. Oh, Chris is making me drive myself today. Oh, see, and I already screwed up. All right. So through April, things are looking good, kind of continuing the pattern we've seen the first quarter. We're doing about $900,000 better than budget right now. $700,000 of that is from revenue and $230,000 better on expenses. When we look at why we're doing so much better on revenue, it's the interest earnings. We knew they were high to start the year, but the Fed had been talking about cutting rates. We thought our interest earnings would start to drop, but they haven't. So we're still making a lot of interest. And the impact fees are running ahead of budget, which is, for me, kind of a nice surprise for this year. So if you look at just kind of the revenue picture, you'll see water sales, we are above budget. Some of that was the Olympic Park taking more money, more water, Park City's wheeling a little bit more. And I'll get to it a little later. We've had a lot of customers change from standby to water using customers a little quicker than I planned, let's say. So that increases revenue because they're paying a little bit more every month as a base rate, plus they're using water, so we get that money too. Yes.
Why is Park City wheeling more?
I was surprised to see that. I think even though they've been doing a lot, if I saw on the park record correctly, they actually didn't go live with that.
Yeah, that's what I saw
this
yeah.
last week or two.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So they've been, their sense. Testing period for it went longer than they planned. So we may see quite a drop in how much they're going to wheel the rest of the year.
Okay.
These two categories, these are where interest and impact fees are basically impact fees are in development and other revenue is interest earnings. So we can kind of skip down from that. Operations. Oh, this was an interesting. So a couple of years ago, we switched how we account for meters. Because we'd get all these deposits and we'd recognize it as revenue. Now we got an accounting principle is you match expenses to revenue. So we kind of put that all in a holding. Then we recognize the revenue when we get it. We've already installed 76 meters through April. So that's, again, where we're getting a lot of people kind of changing over to from standby to water. So that's higher than I'd anticipated. That drove that development-related collections, too.
Hey, let me ask you a question.
You bet.
What's your opinion on interest rates? Do you think they'll go down?
I think they will. But everything we're reading is they're not going to do it until inflation comes more under control, which I would not say it's under control yet.
No, I don't think so.
So I think we're probably looking – you can see it, though, a little bit. Like on your CD rates at your bank and things like that, you were able to get above 5 a little while ago. Now you're just a little bit above 4. So they're starting to build in that they think there will be some cuts still this year. But the PDIF is still earning 5.4%.
Your deposit rates are going to come down much quicker than your borrowing rates.
Yeah. So there's still some anticipation they will be, but I wouldn't count on it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So expenses, we're doing well. Again, this is kind of our low expense time of year. I mean, obviously, like payroll and things, that is consistent, but expenses obviously ramp up in the summer as well. But looking good so far. The big change here in the cash position I wanted to point out is our operating reserves went up a lot this month because basically we got approval from drinking water to take out of capital facility reserves. So we took it out of here and could put it up here. We took some of impact fees and again could take it out and put it up here. So it just means that cash that was restricted that Dana was kind of talking about is now unrestricted. We can use it for what we want because we used our own cash to pay for things that can be paid for with restricted cash. So that just kind of helps our days on cash on hand look a little better. Looking at growth, so we are at 40 new connection requests for this year. So again, close to last year and close to 2020, not at all what 21 and 22 were. And you'll see over here, Promontory is at 11, again, close to 2020, but better than last year, pretty significantly. So kind of going back into our historical growth pattern, you know, not the two huge years we were dealing with during COVID. Water usage. So the 68 acre feet that our customers use in April was 3 acre feet more than before. A big change this year is Promontory Golf actually started to take water in April because you kind of remember it was kind of hot and dry for a little bit in April, so they kicked on the systems. We might have given that back in May because it's been kind of rainy and cold again, but so that was kind of an interesting change. So our budget looked a little better in April than it probably really is and will probably be a little worse in May. But if you look at our historical usage, we're at 296 through the year, 294 through this time last year. So our usage is holding really tight to what it has been by our customers. Again, summer is what steers this ship. The blue line is right where we expect it to be with growth and rate increase. We planned on this so that we can meet all our obligations, cover the debt, have enough for capital. So this is trending just how it should. And as you can see, in May, May isn't a big budget month. It's still going to be about right here. last year is when June was really wet and cold, so we came in well under. So hopefully June will kind of, I don't mind it being rainy and cold in May, but in June, if we can warm up a little bit, that's better for revenue. And then going back to, so you'll see up here that residential sales, we were above budget by about 18,000. Standby fees were actually under budget now. And this goes back to my earlier point that we've had more of these standby customers come up to be residential, actual water using customers. Everything else is pretty much kind of what you'd expect this time of year. So yeah, I think it's going according to plan so far and a little better than plan, let's say, because of the interest income.
Cool.
Any other questions?
No. I don't have any questions. You also are going to present something on the Utah Retirement System Tier 2 employee contribution.
Well, I put it under Steve's.
Oh, okay.
It's finance related, but I put a memo in your packet, just an informational memo describing the changes that we'll be seeing in the the URS Tier 1 and Tier 2 contributions for starting July 1st. Just a tiny little bit of background. What's basically happened is the Tier 2 retirement system has hit its max of what the legislature has said employers can contribute. That's 10%. The actuarial folks are saying that we need a contribution of 10.7. With it going over that max, it's requiring an employee contribution of 0.7%. The legislature was not interested in entertaining an increase to that over 10%. They, based on what I've heard anecdotally, they would rather see wages be increased than benefits increased. So all of the agencies are now kind of scrambling and everyone's doing something a little bit different. Like I mentioned in the memo, some people are increasing wages to help employees make that contribution. There is a tax component to that because what the employee will have to contribute is after taxes are taken out. So the state of Utah has done 0.7% wage increase to their Tier 2 employees. The Utah Retirement System has done 1% increase for their employees to help with that tax implication. It looks like the county is going to, the county staff will go to council on June 5th with a 0.95% increase to wages. Like I said, this is just informational for discussion purposes, but internally our staff has kind of said 1%, 0.95, 1%. I don't really, it seems kind of silly. So we're just seeking 1%. And like I also mentioned in the memo, we will have savings because employer contributions on the Tier 1 fund are going down 1% because that fund is now mature. People are retired. We know what their salaries are going to be or what their payouts are going to be. Where the Tier 2 really, the increase is really due to those high cost of living increases that weren't originally in the actuarial estimations prior. So that's what's driving it. That's what our thoughts are. If you have any thoughts or any recommendations, I'm happy to hear those or take those to council or bring them up to David Warnock. But again, no decision now. We will see what the county decides, and then I'll bring it back to you in June 1.
So to be clear, are you thinking 0.95 or 1% or whatever it comes up to clear across the board or just for the employees in the Tier 2 category?
Tier 2.
And is that the Tier 2, including the other two employees on the 401k plan?
Yeah.
And will we just do whatever the county does, or do we make an independent decision?
We have our own, you know, we don't have to do what the county does, similar to what they do with their COLA or merit. I've talked to David Warnock about it, and he agrees that you have your own budget. You should be doing what works for your employees and your budget in this fiscal year. It doesn't necessarily have to follow the county. I just wouldn't want to get really sideways with doing something crazy. So
right.
I think a little bit of a difference. I don't think they're going to push back at all. It's just administrative way a little easier. That's my thought.
And URS is doing one.
And URS is doing one.
If you've got another like benchmark to compare against, I think you're totally safe.
Yeah.
So we don't need to make a recommendation.
Nope, this is just for informational purposes. I'll bring back an update at the next meeting in June, and then we can just make that decision.
Okay. Right. Any other questions on that? Okay, then let's get Chris up here for an Electron solar update.
Yeah, so this was something that was completed several years ago. You guys had all signed off on it back when Scott was around. This was the additional buy-in that the entire county did for all of the county facilities. So basically, the short version is we're paying a 3% premium on our power to cover the buy-in to this to be on the renewable side of stuff. Finally, this project is now active. They had a big, huge delay with all kinds of panels procurement and all and COVID and all that stuff really slowed it down. It's finally online. It's finally up and moving. And so now this was a press release that came out last week. Unfortunately, none of them actually mentioned Mountain Regional being the largest power consumer within the Summit County umbrella.
Yeah.
But, you know, nonetheless, we are participating in this with all of our facilities except for the treatment plant, because the treatment plant, the solar project, is moving forward on that. And that was exempted from this to begin with because we were going to be hitting our, you know, 95% renewable power from the floating solar array.
So what will our, you know, like when will we be net zero or will we actually be on the other side of that? You know, will we actually be sending power back to the grid at some point?
So from the.
Between this and the solar panels on the lake.
We will end up it'll take a year to figure out how close, that power output from the Electron is. And it'll take us a year to figure out on the, from this fall, it'll take a year to figure out with the solar system at the pond, how that, you know, fleshes out for the season. I would guess within, you know, say 18 months from now, we'll know how close we are. And that's something the county is going to be monitoring. And they're the ones that are taking all of it. When they talk about the green credits and things like that, that's something the county's going to hold on to. It's not worth our administrative time to spend doing that. It's better for the county to look at that. But we can report back to you as soon as we get some solid numbers on it. They haven't even figured out how they're going to bill us yet. Yeah. So we are working with Dave on an interlocal agreement on how that works. They had talked about at one point trying to settle up monthly on it. And we have like almost 80 sites right now. We have 80 individual power meters, which is ridiculous compared to all the other county entities. And our, you know, some of our bills are you know, we have basically 3 or 4 different power rates we pay on. So to figure it out is going to take some time to get those bills sorted and get our payment part squared away on it. And once that happens, then the other parts will kind of fall in place and we'll be able to tell you guys. But I would guess it's going to be pretty close. But as soon as the power starts actually flowing from both projects, we'll be pretty close.
Pretty close to 100%. Yeah. Pretty close to cover all of it in renewable and not just buying credits, but actually having product online that's producing the clean energy, which is cool.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. And it's also, I mean, I know they said that Rocky Mountain Power's got 6 states that we're getting, you know, it's coming from coal from wherever, it's all Uber. But this is kind of cool that this project is literally in our distribution pipe. So, I mean, it's a cool thing.
Yeah.
And so many people participated and we're able to stay in participation over a lot of, you know, hiccups with COVID and the trade wars and China and trying to get product in and then hard stops and then, you know, hard starts trying to get product in. So.
Yeah. And the net cost didn't change significantly in the whole scheme of things. It's not way different than when we started. So consider it kind of a win. So.
Did KPCW or Park Record pick this up?
Yeah, they had, Lisa was saying that KPCW just had a thing that's going on.
They had it, and then they had Park City's sustainability guy, I believe, on this morning talking, if you want to hear about it. He did a great job explaining it. And that kind of saying those same things. All the partners were able to stay intact. Vail's part of it. Those Altera's part of it. Salt Lake County, and there's a ton of entities that were able to stick through it and make sure that to see it to fruition and to have it actually come online and be providing as much power it is for all of this area to be renewable is pretty big achievement.
Yeah, 80 megawatt solar site is big. Mm-hmm. It's a big site.
The other thing they said that was kind of cool is sometimes you get, you know, there's stuff that comes up about taking up space and are we disturbing habitat, where the panels are going. And this is on a Superfund site, which I did not know. So it's actually on a Superfund site that otherwise wouldn't be usable. So they put the panels on there, and it also helps. I don't know all the ins and outs, but it somehow the tax base is now helping the school district in Tooele, because there's a portion of money that has to go through, I think, property taxes or whatever. Now, yeah, so it's helping a lot of different areas, you know, not just in renewal, but really the way the project has been done and the foresight to do this 7 years ago, whatever it finally took to get into fruition, is pretty great. And it's still, you know, a lot of things change in 7 years. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. And yeah, all the benefits that we're seeing are actually finally coming to fruition. So
for those of you that aren't familiar with where it is, so here's Salt Lake, Great Salt Lake. So I-80 headed out west towards Wendover. It's this parcel right here.
That's super fun?
Yep. Right on the edge of the
Or just lake. Tailings or something from Kelly Potter.
No, that's Magcor. That's Magcor.
But anyway, that's what this whole site that you're looking at.
What did they do out there?
Wow. We probably don't want to know.
Well, they've been known for giving the middle finger to EP.
Really? Why are you being there? Contamination from what?
That place. Wow. Okay. Silver lining. Good.
But yeah, as far as not impacting grazing grounds or, you know, wildlife habitat, right? That's a heck of a place to do it.
Yeah. Oh, they also said there's a substation out there too.
Yeah.
I guess because it's a huge load, all that. And there was already a substation out there that they could connect to. So it wasn't like they were having to build a brand new substation either. Yeah,
just south of where he's at right now, there's another giant solar complex right along the highway by Long Rock there.
Oh, out this way?
No, right.
So, down here?
Right in that area there, right near where the highway intersection is.
Oh, over here?
It's on both sides of the road.
Yeah, you can see the grid going there.
So that's the infrastructure sort of kind of out in that side of the desert for this purpose.
I'd rather have a solar site than a nuclear waste dump anyway.
Yeah, that one you can drive past on your way to
Dublin. I've been there
at least a year. I don't
know. I used to spend a lot of time out there.
Yeah, I don't know. If you have any business in Skull Valley, it's impressive.
Actually, Chris Robinson has some way the heck out here for his for grazing for his cattle out here.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
Thanks,
Chris. Sam, do you have a 2024 capital project quarterly update for us?
Yeah, so here's the first board update in the year. Still no tier one external bid projects. Thanks, Chris. Sage Hills betterment is nearly completed, so that's exciting. This will be a big improvement to the district. It gives us a redundant pathway of water from Signal Hill into the Atkinson zone and the rest of the district. And we're kind of at the punch list stage, waiting for SCADA integration and a couple other things, but really close. There's the control valve building on the outside, and it's architectural flourishes there.
Love it.
But we've got power hooked up, as you can see, and this will be a really good one to get checked off the list. It took a little bit longer than we would have liked, but promontory's motivated, especially allows them to sell them their 15-20 lots on the downhill side of Sage Hills near their new short course, near the New Hills golf course. So that's exciting. Stacy's kind of helping implement the punch list and doing a great job keeping an eye on it. So we expect this one to get wrapped pretty shortly.
And the betterment, just to be clear, was not, we are not paying for the architectural features on this.
Right.
Well, at least there's no stone veneer.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be really.
It's easy upkeep for us in the future, though, it is.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, which is one of the main things. The second betterment that we've had on books at Promontory, there's no significant update here. Promontory ownership, I guess, has approved and is pursuing a new master plan concept for the South End Promontory. And this is just kind of an architectural little snippet just for the visual, but the black road in this figure is kind of the new main egress, ingress out to Brown Canyon Road. That's required by the county for contemplated continued development in the south area of their system. So we haven't seen a full blown set of design drawings, but when we get them, we'll reevaluate where we're at, see if it's still feasible to upsize the water line and extend it to Browns Canyon Road to kind of protect the district for future scenarios, new customers that may come in line, and save some cost down the line. So we've still got budget allocated at least for one more year. And we'll keep everyone updated as we get news on that front. So our largest kind of internal driven capital project is out at Old Ranch. And it's kind of getting split into two projects now. One is more on the surge protection side and also switching the system we use to control surge. And then the second is going to kind of be electrical upgrades and an on-site generator. So we're seeing really large electrical lead times, and it kind of feels like 2025 is a more realistic date to have the electrical pieces of the project finished. The nice part about that is they can operate essentially independently as we work through it as a capital project. So 2024 is still a good time frame to actually get the mechanical and surge piping done, switch to a nitrogen-based system, get all that integrated, tied into SCADA, et cetera, et cetera. So making good progress on the mechanical side. And we're going to jump into and try and do as much procurement we can on the electrical piece as possible this year. I know Chris is running that down and working with our electrical folks to, find and procure all the critical pieces there. There's a couple of pictures on this page, too.
We love pictures.
So not too exciting, but this is where we're going to be setting the bulk nitrogen tank on the outside of the building. So got all that prep for delivery next week. And then we've done all the major mechanical modifications ready for a surge tank. So you can see the area on kind of page right of the mechanical photo is the space we opened up to actually have for the surge tank to go and open it there. Hard to get photos of a well. well, two is online from an operational perspective and just working through the last pieces on the regulatory side. So we're awaiting a couple more lab results, and we should be able to hit some peak well two back on the system. So that's exciting. We've been working on this one for a while.
Yeah.
And we're in good shape. Just needed some turbidity results, radionuclides, and some bacteriological results. And the state should give us a thumbs up. We're ahead of that, and they know it's coming. So they've been really good to work with in this picture.
Yeah, and from a system standpoint, this is going to help offset the loss of the spring, right? Because
it feeds
directly into the same tank. So it's a direct offset of that loss.
They're the same?
Into the same tank.
Same pressure. What is the well flow?
Oh, it's less than the springs, certainly, yep. But
we're at this very hard 80 to 100 gallons a minute.
Yeah, so.
What was the spring?
Well, depends when you measure it, but for the peak season, I always use 300 as a number.
Kind of on an average, it's closer to 100.
The lowest flow you get out of is about like 60.
Yeah. Around July, the last 2 weeks in July, where you typically see the peak of our usage curve. I always kind of use 300 as like the back of the market number, but it behaves not too different from a surface water runoff. Obviously, you see a ton of flow in the spring and things taper off over time, to Richard's point. But this is the second well we brought online in the area. So last year we finished up on peak well 3. That does about 130.
Yeah, probably closer to 100. Yeah.
And then this is on peak well 2, second in active source in the area. So trying to make up a difference, but for this peak season should have around 200 GPM to try and offset the spring loss from those two wells. This is our well rehab project we've identified for this year, so it's up at Sun Park Well 2. This was also a well that's been largely inactive, but leaned on it pretty heavy last year when the tank project was going on. So Brian's got that scheduled for rehab.
We're going to pull it next month.
And then, if possible, again, lead times on the electrical side are challenging, but I'd like to get some SCADA improvements done to not have to operate it in hand and kind of use it more as an emergency source. So that's our well read for this year. The lost canning transmission gate valve, no updates there. We've got it scheduled for November, got the valve procured and two good bids in hand that our transmission team is feels comfortable with. So we're in good shape to complete that project at the end of the year.
What's the operating pressure?
Oh, that's a good question. It is just under, I think it's just under 325 PSI.
Kind of fancy valve.
Yeah, we didn't have to get a crazy pressure class valve. But no, I mean, it's a big valve.
Right.
And it's a gate, obviously. We picked the line, so it needs to be a full-blown gate valve.
Yeah.
So getting this buried and online is a big project and something beyond the scope of what we should probably be doing internally.
So how will you use it?
So the big upside of this valve is it allows us to isolate the bottom part of the transmission line. So if there's any work that occurs at Lost Canyon Booster Pump Station that requires the pressure to come off the pump station, replacing valves or whatever the work might look like.
And work below the valve.
We can work below the valve.
Yeah.
Still keep Signal Hill pond online. Don't have to drain the pond and can keep our two raw water customers and golf course customers all in service floating off Sigma Hill Pond while the work takes place. So we wouldn't have to turn off service to the short course, for instance, for Promontory, which is a big deal. So it kind of allows, gives more flexibility for the transmission folks to get the work done on their own terms.
And you get out of the pond, use the storage as well.
Yeah, leverage that.
Do you need to get air back in below the valve?
Yep, we've got an air valve as part of the project.
Okay.
Yep. Absolutely. But yeah, it'll be good.
Do you have an approximate where?
Kind of that bulge to the north.
Yes.
Kind of by that gravel pit, just a little bit above it.
Right there, actually.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, so it's a good compromise. We kept the pressure, got the pressure down a little, you know, not quite as nasty as it is right at the bottom of the pump station, but it's up canyon far enough that we still keep that customer in service. So that's also the location of our first raw water customer up the Lost Canyon Lake. So it's a compromising location, but I think it'll work well. Transmission folks are on board with it and think they can get access to it when needed.
Wait, we have a raw water customer down there?
Unilite.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's come up before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. You're right about the gravel pit too.
Yeah,
and raw water connections. Well, I understand they were critical to securing easements for the original Lost Canyon project.
Oh.
So gosh. That's their hay.
Nice. Inside. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. But two small customers and then the Promontory raw water, primarily golf courses, is the entirety of the raw water system.
I mean, because in the past, the only other way to isolate the system was to close the valve right at the pond. So the whole line would have to get trenched, right?
That's a lot of water. And it's 5 miles of pipeline.
Yeah.
And it takes the Nicholas and short course golf course as well. Operations driven project. I think it's a great idea. We're running that one down. And then I think this is our last one on the list, the Silver Creek paving. We're just working through the final design. Jess has actually done an awesome job running down some bids, both for the earthwork and the road base and paving. So we're going to do some final tweaks of the design and get a final bid hopefully within the next month or so and get on folks' schedules before the end of the paving deadline. So that's the capital projects for the year.
Okay, great update. Andy, do you have any comments for us?
I do have a couple. Brent Hamble and Judd was recognized for 10 years Service Water Quality Alliance. So I just wanted to point that out to everything. Thank you everyone for coming to the groundbreaking today. We just have a single permit. We don't have permit for the administration building. We hope to get that Tuesday, but by actually pulling the permit, that will allow them to mobilize on site, get the fencing up, get the trailer up there, and start doing other things. Before with the groundbreaking, we met with Oakland and the architect, and right now we're $100,000 over the initial bid. There's contingencies that have been built in there for weather since we're starting a little later than we thought. But as long as we don't go over, we should pretty much be right on the budget that they told us. One of the things in going through this whole process that's amazing, that the county trying to charge us a $75,000 transportation impact fee, which would have been our largest impact fee and even greater than our building permits. And so Shane Scott was able to waive that for us, which will help. So you'll start seeing money being spent toward the building more aggressively now. The money that Steve that scrolled away will start to get spent. The solar array, the contractor's out setting the blocks around the pond, so that'll be our next big event later this summer, early fall, where we will have a ribbon cutting to commission that. Part of that is we'll have to coordinate with Rocky Mountain Power for the Blue Sky, making sure they get the proper recognition and everything. But I think that will get a lot of press, more than the solar array or the electron out there in Tooele. A lot of people are really interested in that.
Excuse me.
Paul invited KPCW to the groundbreaking today. They said, solar? I said, no, building. They go, we're good. So that's good. And then we have with Kim's retirement out at Lost Canyon, Dixon from distribution went to Lost Canyon. Jackson is going back from customer service to the distribution, and we will be posting for a new customer service person, and that will go out shortly. So we are looking for another full-time employee. And then our seasonals, three out of our four seasonals will start on Tuesday, and then the fourth one will start the following Monday. So we're gearing up for our summer season.
Yes, nice to know that we got several of those guys back.
Yeah.
Four out of five.
Yeah, that's great. Were they the four out of the five that you'd want, Dad?
Yes.
Okay. That's even more important, right?
Last year.
Yeah, great. Okay, anything else? Okay. And then did anyone have any questions on the department updates?
I have a few comments on your grid.
Oh, please. The floor is yours.
And you or anybody, do you want to comment on this backflow issue? I got a memo or an email about backflow. Do you want to comment on that or anybody?
That if you don't have your backflow report done, Anna will shut you off. What's your question, Joel?
I really don't. I'm not sure I understand.
If you have irrigation, outside irrigation, Utah state law requires you to have a backflow preventer. And as your water provider, we are required to monitor whether or not you're in compliance. So this is an annual requirement that's been on the books for quite a while, but it's only been over the last couple of years that the state has really cracked down and started making us enforce that. Actually, Mountain Regional has actually led the way in this basin on making sure people have complied. Stacy Blomquist, Granite. So we're converting from how we've done it in-house to a new company called
Swift Comply
that will allow a backflow tester in the field to log in and send in the report. Otherwise, in the past, it was all done manually where they'd have to go out, they'd have to come in and give us a piece of paper, we'd have to upload it and mark it in the account, and so on and so forth. So it's something that we are required to monitor. So Joel.
Is there anything that I need to do?
You personally need to have a certified backflow inspector come and inspect your home.
All right, we'll talk later.
Okay.
Well, no, now that gives me a question, because I got my inspection done, and then last week I got some email, but I don't have an extra step. The backflow guy will send in all the reports and
yeah,
and I assume that email went to every customer in the district.
Yeah,
I don't even have outside irrigation, but I got the email. And
okay, yeah.
And at the bottom it says if this doesn't apply to you, disregard.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
it went to everyone in
here. Yeah, and it's not just outside irrigation, it's also fire suppression.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So if you have fire suppression, that's a separate one. If you have irrigation, that's a separate device.
Those of us in Southern Park don't have those luxuries.
Yeah, that's neither.
Well, and I heard Summit County doesn't require the testing on the fire suppression anymore, is that?
No, I got
mine checked anyway.
It's not a county thing.
Okay.
Yeah, not what we're talking about anyway. What we're talking about is a backflow prevention.
Gotcha.
Yeah, which is part of the EPA, and it's state driven too. I mean, it's responding state regs. Yeah. So even in Oakley, I got a message just that they're going to start enforcing it. Nobody else has really been enforcing it except for Mountain Regional in the area. Park City is just starting to do it. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
So it's a different approach, because before we were only asking for inspections from installations where we knew there was a backflow preventer. Isn't that?
Yeah, and so this email went out to everyone, whether you have one or not. And at some point,
that's the change.
At some point, we as a district are going to have to address those that do not have backflow preventers, like Silver Springs, that have irrigation, but
I think we talked about it in the September meeting, how we're going to send out surveys to all those homes who think they're grandfathered in, because there's no such thing as grandfathered in.
But it's a different approach, I guess, is my question. That before we've only been asking for the inspection from services where we knew there was a backflow preventer.
Yeah, I would, yes. You're saying you're asking, and I'm saying we were telling you. I know you have this based on your development agreement, so you have to provide it to me. And yes, this is going out like educational. If you have it, you need to supply it.
That's the change.
But we've also changed our approach about when backflows are due. Before, it was spread out over almost the entire year, and now it's consolidated. So you can't test the irrigation backflow in the winter. Right, so it has to be done in the warm weather months when the outside irrigation is. A fire suppression can be tested any time. So that approach has also changed, and hopefully this third-party software will also help us and make it easier for a backflow inspector to go out and inspect, make the reporting easier for us. It is, we have John, who, he spends a lot of his time just working on backflow.
Well, we originally started by rolling this out in phases. Started with commercial and then blah, blah, blah. So.
Yeah, the developments that we know it's in, right? It was required by the development to have them. And where those are there.
So, for example, new homes and Promontory all are required to have a backflow device on their stuff that's testable. In Silver Springs, those homes are old enough that most of them don't. They have an older check valve type system that's not testable.
It's in their crawl space.
It's in their crawl space. It's not accessible. So eventually those people are all going to have to go to a testable backflow device.
And if you participate in the Cash for Grass program and you do not have one, you have to install one to qualify, which is a change.
How many backflow inspectors are there in the general area? Are there enough?
Two dozen.
There are enough guys to serve the area.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You go to the state, the state website lists all the certified. There's two or three that are the main ones in this area. And I mean, it's repeat business for them.
Yeah. Right? I would think it would be, to get that, once you got your license, I mean, it's kind of a license to print money, cause they're charging $300 for every house in Promontory and,
Yeah, line them up.
Yeah. Like I just got a fancy flyer in the mail for somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
Yeah, I have a couple of other things. I'm on a number of boards, and on one of the boards, we're going to quarterly meetings. I'm not suggesting we go to quarterly meetings, but I wanted to tell you that we're going to quarterly meetings. We also have the proviso on one of the boards that if we want to meet other than quarterly and call an emergency meeting or a monthly meeting, we can. But I'm just passing that along to you guys. I'm not saying we should do anything.
I don't know that we would have the option to go to quarterly, but you certainly have the option to call an emergency meeting.
Right.
Just because of your fiduciary responsibility and the financials and everything and procurement, post, you know, PO and things like that.
Okay. It'd
be a really long meeting every quarter.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
We want to see you more frequently, Bill.
No, you don't. You're just saying that.
I'm happy to have you back, Joel.
Thank you. Thank you. I have some other things, but I can't think.
I'm going to tell you this, though. We have not had a leak in Summit Park, but we have spent time in the preserve.
Really?
You just did it right there.
I didn't bring anything on Summit Park. I didn't bring up anything.
I know, but last week we had a leak off the tank in the preserve.
Oh, really?
It was gnarly to get to.
On the tank line.
Yeah.
Off-road. Yeah.
We fixed one a couple of days ago, just down the road from it.
Are things getting bad in the preserve?
It just, I mean, just coincidentally, there were two in the last week, and I did have a customer call thinking it was excessive up there, but, you know, when you look at the tank line and you look that it's, you know, it's not bedded correctly and it's sitting on rock and there's a hole at the bottom. And of course, there's an overflow line just below where the leak was. So is it runoff? Is it a leak? Is it, you know, the tank overflowing? And unfortunately, it was a leak. And, you know, we're up at 7,200 feet elevation wise. Beautiful view of the surrounding area. But the guys did a great job getting through the sagebrush, getting down there. And then there was like one on the corner of, I don't know what that's
called. Down the road.
Well, as long as you run up Summit Park, off Summit Park.
Great.
That's all I have. I may call you though about the backflow thing.
Yeah.
And we'll talk.
Yep.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay.
Thank you.
If there's nothing else, we have a motion to adjourn. Go ahead.
I went through Corolla's proposal and I didn't see the ownership of the meter in there. They just said they would provide it. Maybe just check and see if that's the owner. We're going to own the meter. I didn't see it in the cost as a line item.
No, yeah, I'm certain, but yeah, we'll end up with that. It was part of that.
For permanent.
Yes.
Yeah, no, we talked about working both of these, either them providing us one just for the bench testing phase, or us using this as a method to procure one permanently. And we thought it was a good opportunity. You know, given where we're at budget, they just take care of it.
And that was their recommendation as well.
Yeah, they offered it up as an option.
Yep.
Initially during the scoping meeting.
Even on the, when we first met with them on the Jacobs review, they recommended it, mm-hmm. that we should use that instead of.
Yeah, it's a useful tool. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's an exciting option.
Okay, that's it.
Oh, I have one other thing. Just asking in general, do we need anyone else on the board? I have a banker that I think very highly of.
So, I think the board can be up to 7 days, but
yes.
Typically it's been 5, and the terms that will expire at the end of this year is your term and Ian's term, and Ian, you've served 2.
That'll be my second.
And then you've served 1. So you'd both be eligible to reapply, and the way that the county has done it, if you've served well, then typically it's just been a reappointment.
I'll talk about this guy that I know, but I won't bore everyone with all the details. That's all I have.
Okay. Dave, it's nice of you to join us.
beginning.
Yes. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Right. Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. We are adjourned at 4:19.